Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I think it's fine building jumbo planes, taking a ride into cyberspace. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Get what you want to if you want, 'cause you can get anything. I know we've come a long way. We're changing day to day. Tell me, where do the children play? Well, you roll on roads over fresh green grass, where your lorry loads and petrol gas, and you make them long, and you make them tough, but they just go on and on, and it seems that you can't get off. No, no, we've come a long way, we're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play?
Thank you for joining us on the Wise Women Media, the radio show. That was Cat Stevens, now known as Yusuf Islam, singing Where Do the Children Play? I believe that was off the T for the Tillerman album. I'm not sure, but I remember listening to that. I was so in love with that man when I was much younger. But we're going to be talking with Heidi Hallsworth in just a few minutes. She should be on the line here. I'm going to click her in just a moment. Heidi, you there? Hello? Heidi, I can't hear you. Let me go ahead and...
Hello?
And give... Hello?
Hi.
Oh, there you are. Okay, now I hear you. Let me just give a few announcements, and then we can get started with the show. I'm glad you're able to be with us. For those of you that don't know where we are on the web, you can find us at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. All our archived shows are there, a list of our sponsors, And don't forget to hit us up on the GoFundMe link. This is independent media, so we have no corporate sponsorship or advertisers. So we need help. If you want to keep this show going every week, then help support it, please. And just click on the GoFundMe link on the website. And very easy, smooth process to donate as little or as much as you can. We can also be found on Facebook at Wise Women Media, our Facebook page. We also have a Facebook group. We're on Twitter at hashtag Wise Women Media. So you can find us all over the web and at our site there on Blogspot. So I want to introduce Heidi Hallsworth. Heidi is more or less an expert at some of these laws concerning children regarding executorship, the privatized system that we now have, and she has a lot of questions but a lot of knowledge that she gained from her grandmother, and she's wondering why there are so few voices for these children out there. So, Heidi, I'm going to give you the floor, and you can kind of give us an introduction on how you got involved in this, and exactly what you envision happening with this particular issue, because no one seems to have taken it on, and that's very concerning to me. So this is Heidi Hallsworth. Go ahead. You got the floor.
Thank you. And I would by no means say that I'm any kind of expert. I was just an attentive grandchild with a very fascinating, wonderful grandmother who really cared about kids. For years, she had worked in the Guardian Ad Litem program. And for anyone who doesn't know, the Guardian Ad Litem program is a volunteer program. When we deal with children who are taken from their parents and end up in our foster care system, many times you get a court case, and everyone in the courtroom has a lawyer, the parents, the Department of Children and Families, a bunch of other parties that have some kind of involvement in the case. And the only person in the room, the person we're making the decisions about, the child, has no representative. Guardian ad litems volunteer to be the representative for the child in courtrooms and help facilitate this legal process. And my grandmother had done some really amazing work with them for years. And she talked a lot about it before she passed away. She passed away in April of 2012. The year prior, she had become the Guardian Ad Litem of the Year for her county and district. And she was really proud of that. And our entire family, we've always been really proud of her for this work. But she did leave this world with some very big concerns about what was happening to the kids that she told our family about. And that I feel like it's important that we talk about, at least discover, what was she talking about?
It's very interesting that this, you know, you would think that this would be a big issue. There are so many things that are issues that aren't people-oriented. And this is people-oriented, and no one seems to have taken it on. So that really bothers me, and the fact that there's no public voices for these kids.
Well, Nelson Mandela, he's been in the news recently, but when I think about these kids, I've always thought about this one quote, and it just seems kismet that he's been in the news lately, and I think of this, but he said that, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, a nation's soul can be measured by the way it treats its children.
Right.
And that always struck me. And there's just not a very big demographic that is concerned with children in the foster care system. I remember having a conversation about them with my father, and he was a very big Republican, and he had said, well, I don't agree with having to pay taxes, having money that I would use to support my children and my family go to these other kids, these other people's children. And I stopped, I turned, I said, Daddy, no, they're kids. They can't do anything for themselves. They can't go out there and get a job and better their lives. If they are in diapers, if they are in elementary school, they can't change what is happening to them. They can't take their parents over their knees and spank them until they're better parents. Someone needs to stand up for them. And he just did not feel like this was his responsibility. But I always felt that it was a national responsibility to help people who just could never help themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's talk about one of the first ones that really became like a media story, and I remember it, and you remember it, and that was the case of Relia Wilson in 2002 here in Florida. Now, we're only talking about one state. We're talking about Florida. But this is occurring, and there's different laws, of course, in different states, but Florida seems to be pretty bad with the child executorships. Tell us a little bit about what you know about Relia Wilson, because some people may not even be able to remember this. It was 11 years ago.
Yeah, it was 2002. I remember I was at the University of Florida at the time. And Relia Wilson was a foster child in the system who had a very bad caseworker who had falsified reports saying that she had seen this child, and she just went off the map. No one could find her. And when the facts caught up that this girl was missing, the people who were supposed to be taking care of her didn't know where she was, her caseworker didn't know where she was, no one knew where she was, that's when this one case got a ton of media attention. And mm-hmm. after that, Jeb Bush was still governor. He had insisted that we go towards this privatized child welfare system where if nonprofits took in and accepted responsibility for the kids, that you could sue a nonprofit for losing the kid, but you couldn't sue the state. So this was his solution, even though at the time it was just a test. They were just testing this case. And in four of the five markets where it was tested, it completely failed. It only succeeded in the fifth because they got a lot of donations that the program's directors even said they would not be able to sustain year after year after year, which would have been necessary. So mm-hmm. just in order to keep pressure off the state, they switched to this privatized system where we put the welfare of children into the hands of nonprofit organizations. So they're responsible and they can be sued now.
So what is your take on that? Why would that not work?
Well, this is what my grandmother told me, and do bear in mind, I am repeating what my grandmother told me. I have not went out and done any research to verify this. This is just what she felt was important enough to tell me about.
Right.
That she was talking about, these were her concerns, so I do want to make that clear. But she said that the boards of directors of these nonprofit organizations would find a way to make a profit on the children. Mm-hmm. They would decide which homes the kids would go to. They would decide everything about their lives, every decision that was made outside of the home itself. They
right.
were given guardianship guardianship, but I don't want anyone to get confused with the guardians ad litem.
Right, right.
Guardianship
would be just whoever has the child at that time and is responsible for that child.
Yeah, whoever's taking care of them.
Right.
And there are a lot of different complications with that. Like, a foster parent can't take the child out of state or can't let the child go to a sleepover even, just because they have to accept a lot of responsibility for that kid. But everything else, like all the bigger important decisions, like does this child have a surgery, you know, the medical consent type, something where it would be serious enough to get medical consent, well, that has to come from these nonprofits, at least as far as I am aware.
Right.
And
right.
They do, and her concern was with the, every one of these children go through a court case. They're usually put into some kind of court-mandated therapy. What she and other guardians she had talked about had found were that the board of directors of one of the nonprofit had started a for-profit counseling center. So they had control over where the kids were getting therapy. Well, they were getting therapy at this one facility controlled by the same people. So even though they were the board of directors for a nonprofit, they'd found a way to get the profit out of these kids. And that profit, that money, comes from our tax dollars.
That's just incredible. And it's almost like, you know, if they can find a way to bill, you know, whatever, and they're aware of the government money that's available too. So if it's a sure thing and these people are medical and they can bill, or they're counselors or whatever, they're going to bill for services and get paid. And of course it's a racket because we're paying for it. And there's something similar, and this, it's a whole other show, but I have a friend who's working with the elder consecutorship, and she's come across some real scam stuff going on with that as well, and it's become a money-making thing. But like I said, it's similar, it's not the same, and that's a whole other show. But this system, I don't know too much about the privatized system. So this happened under Bush's watch. Jeb Bush's watch while he was governor here in this state. Am I right?
As far as I know.
Uh-huh.
I believe, yeah, he was, it would have been around the time, shortly after or around him winning his second term.
Mm. And
if
I wanted to let
recall.
People know very quickly, I was not able to get the chat room up. It is not working. So, and that's on Blog Talk Radio's side, so I'm not sure what happened there, but it's a technical problem. So if you would like to call in or you have anything to add or you have any comments or questions, the phone number is 213-816-0357. Again, it's 213-816-0357. If I don't get to you immediately, just, you know, it's because I don't want to interrupt the flow, so... just be patient, hang on, and I'll get to you so you can ask your question. You had mentioned before in our pre-interview about guardians and their training. Can you tell us the function of the guardians ad litem and their training and why what they're providing is just not enough? But fill us in on a little bit more about that.
Well, I've never undergone the guardian ad litem training myself. This was something that my grandmother did, and it was a really long time ago. I think she did it with my aunt when they were still living up in Indianapolis. But it's a 30-hour course where they train them to fill out all the paperwork and everything precisely to identify the things going on in the children's life and be able to point those out in a courtroom very precisely, and all those very technical aspects of what you have to do, what you should do for these kids. Because it is, like they do, these are volunteers, but they are volunteering to go into a very real courtroom.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And I'm curious as to, are these people government employees, or are they just government?
Oh, no, they're volunteers.
They're volunteers, but are they under government, or are they under the nonprofits?
Well, it is part of the legal system. The court does say give this child a guardian. There aren't enough of them. So it does sort of work through the established legal system. It is kind of a government institution, except it's run by a few educated lawyers in supervisory positions, and then it's just volunteers. And the great thing about that is that when these people who are guardians, who testify in the courtroom, no one is paying them to do this. They are there looking into this child's life because they care about doing the right thing for this kid and making sure something good happens to this kid. That's their only motivation. They're volunteers. They're giving their time away for the love of children who aren't even theirs. And that's
right.
Commendable.
Right. So they're kind of up against like a huge behemoth-type system that is definitely, it's got to be almost like a fight because the system isn't working for the children. It's working to make the money and the tax dollars, yet the ad litems are there to provide, you know, some semblance of fairness and justice for the child. Let's talk a little bit about the medical. You had mentioned a few things about the medical situation for some of these kids. What about when these kids need to see a doctor, when they need to have a procedure, if they're diagnosed with some condition and have to take prescription medications? Can you fill us in on some of that or what you've heard about those types of scenarios?
Well, I don't know a ton about, you know, just when little Joey or Jill gets a cold, what do you do? I don't really know much about that. But my grandmother did deal with this one case. She won her award. Her supervisor said that she was nominated and won this award for her work with this one very sick baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't understand what was going on with the parents. My grandmother was very vague about that. All she really said was they just weren't in a position to care for a baby this sick. This baby had been born, and it was going to die. It needed an organ transplant. At the same time, the guardians, everyone, they knew that this child could not stay with the parents. There's just some reason, something that the parents couldn't do for a baby this sick that meant even leaving it in their home would have been a danger to the baby. I don't know what it is. My grandmother didn't seem to indicate like any kind of emotion towards them except maybe an underlying pity leading me to believe that this happened through no fault of their own. They weren't bad parents. There was just something. But the baby was sick, needed an organ transplant, was not going to get it if they took it away from the parents. They don't give organ transplants to foster children, not a single one. I guess some years back, doctors found that foster kids who had been given organ transplants were having a really high number of rejections. They were rejecting the organs because when you get a transplant, you have to take the anti-rejection medications every single day for the rest of your life, from the time you get the surgery until forever. So it seems that the kids weren't getting the medications they needed, their life-saving medications, in their foster homes. So doctors just cannot give these kids these organs. They cannot let these organs go somewhere where they are just going to get rejected. That is, it's an organ. It's an incredible gift of life. They have to be very careful with it. At the same time, I'm asking myself, what is going on with these kids that we aren't making sure they're in homes where they're getting their life-saving anti-rejection medications every day? Why does no one care? Why has no one made sure that the homes that they are being put in by the government are safe?
And what about the, on the other coin, you're talking about life-sustaining medications, and then we're also talking about children that are prescribed medications that don't necessarily need them, and basically they're being doped up.
We're talking about there's the for-profit group and they send the kids over to, or there's a nonprofit group and they send their kids over to the for-profit counseling center.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my grandmother had this really big concern that the kids were getting the wrong medications. These were abused kids. These were neglected kids. Not all of these kids had attention deficit or the kinds of things that you throw Ritalin at and you throw a pill at. Some of these kids just needed to be in talk therapy. They didn't need the meds. And they weren't being given, like, depression meds. They were being given attention deficit medications that they didn't need. My grandmother had said that she could have gotten at least a dozen guardians within a half hour, all together in one place. No matter, and just on the fact, if she said, we can do something about getting the kids off all the unnecessary medications. She said that that was how big a problem that the guardians that she, other guardians she had been working with felt that it had become.
Right.
And this seems to be the replacement for the very intensive talk therapies that kids who undergo such traumatic circumstances really need.
Mm-hmm.
That was what she was very concerned about.
So in other words, instead of group therapy or one-on-one session or anything like that, it was just easier to put the kids on, you know, just to dope them up and keep them on stuff like, you know, I'm just pulling medications out of my head here, like Ritalin and all these, you know, these really very serious doping-type drugs. And I noticed that a lot of the
one
term...
girl.
Go ahead.
There was one girl that she had dealt with who she'd said that they put her on these unnecessary drugs. That's when they started getting calls from the school that she was acting out, that her grades had dropped down to F from higher grades. She'd just started to do better, and then they put her on this drug, and something about it just flipped the switch, and she started misbehaving. They get her off the drug. She's back up to straight A's, or A's and D's, wherever she was before.
Mm.
And this was a very big complaint among the guardians, according to my grandmother, of course. This was in lieu of talk therapy. Another child who had been the subject of a three-part piece in the Orlando Sentinel, she had complained that instead of getting any kind of specialized treatment for kids of abuse, his only talk therapy was a one-hour bike ride every week with a marriage counselor who had absolutely no experience with children who had ever been abused.
Right.
It's because you can pay that guy less than you can the person with all the specialized training in child psychology, in abused children. They weren't getting those kinds of doctors, the doctors that might actually understand just what kind of trauma they've been through. They got doctors who had experience listening to Jack and Jill complain about their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's just not enough. And that's what our tax dollars are paying for, putting them on unnecessary medications and underqualified therapists.
What about a lot of these terms and conditions that children, you know, counselors that are working with children will throw around, like attention deficit disorder and other such similar conditions? I noticed that a lot of these kids are usually given those labels early on, and it justifies the authorities to get them on these medications. So they can be easier to control, and if they have any underlying issues, probably foster parents would be more willing to take them if they were medicated. Have you heard any of that in anything that your grandmother expressed to you?
Nothing that specific, that it was just to keep them in pliable in homes. She
right.
felt more that it was just used as a way to be able to push them out the door, get them till they were, just keep them calm and keep them from doing anything really big or really problematic until they turned 18 and aged out of the system and weren't their problem anymore. And that's what she seemed to indicate to me that she felt that their motivations were. But then again, that sounds like a lot of speculation on her part, too.
Mm-hmm.
But
now,
a
lot of these same children also end up, it's kind of like a fast track right into the prison industrial complex. I don't know what the stats are on that, and I don't know if anybody...
They're pretty high.
That
I mean,
would be able to tell us, but go ahead.
They're pretty high. It's basically a revolving door. More kids that go into the foster system end up in prison than don't later on. And maybe if we got this specialized treatment earlier on, better treatment to really help them deal with their issues and build a better future starting from their adolescent years, they might not be going into the prison system. Leave their problems unaddressed, and we've just pushed the ticking time bomb out the door.
Right.
A potential
so
ticking time bomb.
Privatizing child care and child welfare has not helped. What it's done is it's taken care of the shareholders, but not the kids. And, of course, nothing's going to function.
Let's keep in mind that this is describing one group that my grandmother had contact with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that every single one of these groups and organizations are bad like this. But the laws are there. But the ones that are bad, the laws let them be.
Right. I wish
the only thing we should do is,
go ahead.
Is strengthen the laws that would provide protections if we're going to keep this privatized system, to at least make sure that the kids are getting at least a standard quality care, that there's some level of this is what is acceptable and this is what is not.
Right, right. I really wish some experts would call in if anybody's listening. I can't tell if you are listening because the chat is broken. I just wanted to make sure everybody that's listening in is aware of that. So if you have any comments or anything to add or you're an expert that would like to provide your opinion, please give us a call at 213-816-0357. We'd love to hear from you. And if you have any questions for Heidi, it's this whole thing about the children and not having a voice. This is going to be a tough question. I need to ask it, though. Did you hear of any of these children not just aging out of the system but getting trafficked before they could age out of the system? Because that seems to be a huge problem now, and it's definitely kept undercover and on the down low, so people don't know about it. But a lot of people think that these systems that are supposed to be working for the children are actually perpetuating the trafficking of children. What's your opinion on that? And I know it's not an expert opinion, and it's not anything that you specifically know about, but have you ever heard about this happening?
I have not heard about that specifically happening, not from anyone who's ever had any experience with the system. I have heard of children being lost. I have heard of the system leaving kids with people who should not have them. There was one girl where, this was in Indianapolis when my grandmother was still a nurse, where she had been prostituted out by her own mother, 15 years old, and she was in the health class that my grandmother taught at an alternative high school in the area. Came to my grandmother for help. She's like, I don't feel safe leaving my baby at home with my drug addict mother. I don't know what to do about it. My grandmother got people involved, and what ended up happening was the girl, the 15-year-old girl, got arrested. Apparently, she had missed too many days of school staying home to make sure her mother didn't let the baby die, the baby she had because she'd been prostituted out for drug money. They arrested her for truancy.
And so what happened to that young woman? Did you ever hear anything else?
After that, she told my grandmother she didn't want to have it. She ruined her life and didn't want to have anything more to do with her because they had left the baby with the drug addict grandmother, and the both of them disappeared. Grandma ran off with the baby, probably sold it, as far as my grandmother assumed, because she had used her kid, her daughter, both her kids, well, the daughter and the grandson, for money. Both had been on assistance, and she was using their government assistance to support her needs so that everything else could go toward the drugs.
Right, right.
So
yeah, she probably
would not
sold the baby then. You know,
yeah.
that's really the Tampa Bay area is one of the biggest areas for just people trafficking in general, but especially trafficking with children. And a lot of people don't know.
Of course, this did not happen in Tampa. This was up in Indianapolis.
But
at least a decade ago.
People that are listening in that are in the Tampa Bay area need to know that this is a huge problem here, and it's definitely on the down low, but it is a big time, and it exists, and it's not a conspiracy theory. So, this is, to me, this is the absolute worst thing that can happen to children, the absolute worst, when they're, you know, brought into, they're trafficked and they're brought into the sex trade. That is just, to me, there can be nothing worse than that for the kids. Tell us a little bit more about the system itself and what you envision, if we had another system, what kind of system would that be and how you would envision that to work?
Well, me, I am not any kind of expert in any of these fields, public policy, how to allocate tax dollars. But I do know this. I have more faith in a government that gets it wrong trying to take care of these kids, because at least their only motivation is to try and get it right. With these privatized corporations or the nonprofits associated with them, they have an ulterior motive. They have a motivation to get it right for their shareholders. Hopefully,
right.
That means they also get it right for the kids. But that doesn't always have to be mutually that doesn't have to always be paired together for people who don't care how they're making the money.
Right.
And we know we have some of those people in society.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're
can
concerned
we please
about the bottom
at least
line
get some
and
laws
nothing
to
else.
Protect them from the ones who are going to care more about the money than the kids. That's right. What I want. That's what I want.
It's this has become a really sad state of affairs, and it hit me personally in my own family for a very short time with my niece, who ended up aging out of the system. But I as the aunt, was not allowed to take custody of her. And that I couldn't figure out either, the fact that my niece was living with somebody who was not even a relative, and I was not allowed to help her and take her in at that point in her life where she was having a difficult family time. And it's not something I'd really care to discuss on the air, but it was so bad for her. I mean, she was very young. She had to grow up really fast. But one of the things that I noticed was when she was not happy in a foster home, she was smart. She knew, or maybe could see things or project things that could happen. But when she wasn't happy or when something was going on, she was out of there. She was gone. She packed her bags and split. And then people wouldn't be able to find her for a while, and then she'd resurface. So it was a tough time for her. I got to say to anybody that's listening, she's 24 years old now, and I couldn't be more proud of her. She came through a really rough time, and it doesn't show on her at all. She's ended up being a pretty balanced person, so I'm proud of her for that. But it was tough, and I was just sitting there saying, why can't these authorities, why aren't the authorities giving her to me as the next closest relative besides her parents? And at that point in her parents' life, they couldn't take care of her. They had other issues that it just precipitated her, them being able to take care of kids, any kids. So I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but, you know, it happened to me, and it was very personal. And I know that my niece was running away because there were things that she was seeing or she thought would happen to her, and she was out of there before they could happen. So, and I got to give her credit for that. A little bit of intuition, too. That had to help some. So, but where do we go from here? How do we work at providing a voice for these kids?
Well, it's really hard. I can't figure it out. They're kids. They themselves cannot vote. They can't really change their situation. And they don't have, and if their parents aren't really taking care of them well, they're not going to care enough to encourage the politicians who represent them to make sure that the system's good enough for their kids. They weren't providing the home that was good enough, or at least most of them were not providing the home that was good enough.
Right.
I don't want to box anyone in or stereotype, but it is a lot of these cases. Oh, my God, they are tragic. They are disturbing. Like the mother prostituting out her own child. Mm-hmm. There's a lot like that. And then there's a lot where it's just people who really didn't do anything wrong. They're just not in a position where they can do the right thing. And no matter, not for one, for trying.
Mm-hmm. We have a situation now where there's so many homeless people that they're not able. Now, I don't know what the laws are in Florida, but I know that in some states, if you don't have an apartment and you can't, you know, buy groceries, that the DCF can come in and take your children away, which to me sounds just so despicably horrid that our government would want to separate children from their parents instead of giving those parents a hand up. Not a hand out, but a hand up. And that bothers me. I'm not exactly sure what the laws are here, and I wish I knew. But it's definitely going to take some further research. But I know we have a huge homeless problem here. A lot of people are on the streets, and I think it has a lot to do with, they keep saying the job situation is improving, and personally I don't see that happening. I see a lot more people going to work off the books and finding alternative ways of making money. And even if they're making that little bit of money, they still can't afford an apartment. So they're on the street. And if they have these children and they can't get them to the doctor because they can't afford it and the emergency room, they can't get groceries, these kids have no place to sleep, or they're in a shelter, or whatever the case may be, it's a dangerous situation for a family trying to keep their kids. Do you happen to know the laws in Florida regarding, you know, what the family must have to maintain the custody of their children?
I don't. As I said, I have not actually worked in this field. This is mostly just what my grandmother felt was just important enough to pass down to tell us. And that's what I come to the table with.
I think she was
still here, because she would be able to answer these questions. She would technically be able to answer these questions. I'm not sure she might legally be able to answer these questions.
Right. Because I'm thinking, if there's some way to help these kids, it must be easier to check out some of the nonprofits that are actually working with the kids that are doing the right thing. And I'm not sure who that would be. I don't even know anymore who that would be, or if there were any of these groups in Tampa that are actually doing the good work by the kids and putting them first. My first inclination is to go through the churches to see what the churches are doing, if they're doing after-school programs or trying to find ways to keep, parents with their kids. But I think that's probably the next step on exploring this a little bit more, is to find out who to align with in regards to these nonprofits and anybody that's doing work with kids. I wish we had had some call-ins, because then we probably could have had some more information. Oh, there is a call-in. Okay, good. We have a call-in from Sarasota, I think, Sarasota area or Bradenton. Let me go ahead and click them in. And it's not coming in. Hang on. Hello? This is to area code 941. Can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sure can.
Oh, okay. Oh, my name is, I'd rather kind of keep my name anonymous for the moment. I'm calling from Sarasota County. I'm in Northport, and I just got home from work, and so I apologize. I didn't get to hear the podcast, but a friend of mine had said, please, please, you need to listen into this. I have a petition circulating to try to save my three-year-old granddaughter's life. Her parents are oxycodone addicts, and they have admitted to drugging her. They will no longer allow us to see her, because I believe she was born addicted, and she was ignored by every agency that was supposed to have caught this. No one tested her in the hospital. She was born in Sarasota Memorial Hospital. When she was born, her father was present, and he was strung out, and I was afraid he was going to pick something up and throw it across the room, and I could not believe that doctors and nurses were in the room and did absolutely nothing about this. I swore that at any minute somebody was going to call the police.
Right.
When she was born, she looks like, in her picture, she looks like she weighs about 15 pounds, and she was less than 7. So I knew she was bloated, but I didn't know why. And then, of course, they couldn't pay their rent, so they came to live with us for 9 months. And when we realized that he was not going to commit to sobriety because he had just gotten out of detox. He was in the program, I think, a year. And they were, you know, they became very angry, extremely angry and vindictive. And so they both left with the baby, and the first thing we did as parents was called, grandparents, was called DCF. I have
right.
never been treated so rudely by both DCF and the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office. I have been told by dozens of detectives that they do not care what happens to my granddaughter. They have no intention, absolutely no intention, of working this case. My husband and I begged for an audience with Sheriff Knight. My husband used to work at a detox facility, and they spent the majority of their time telling us that we were mistaken, that our daughter and her boyfriend are not, in fact, drug addicts, and there is nothing to see here, and that we must move on.
Now, where they're living now, or
yes,
do you
I know
have
exactly
kind of a...
where they're living now. I was ridiculed by a detective for calling the Leo line. She laughed at me. She made fun of me. She said, "Oh, so you think that's going to do you any good? We know you called Leo Affairs." Well, of course you should know I called Leo Affairs. I've done everything. I've stopped reporting to DCF because when we reported to them as a family, they would tell my daughter and her boyfriend everything that was said, everything. And that's why we're no longer able to see my granddaughter. I have not seen her for 24 months.
How old is your granddaughter now?
She just turned 3 in July. They post pictures of her high on the Internet. They take
wow.
her for her
how,
first
how,
birthday.
Can you, I don't know what kind of access you have online, but I would encourage you to get on Facebook and come to Wise Women Media, and you
okay.
can message me there privately.
Okay.
Just click on message, and it will get right to me, and I'll be sure to respond because I'd like to know more. But I'd also even more like to know how we can help, and if there's a petition to be circulated, I'd certainly like to try to help get that out there.
Thank
and
you.
Heidi, do you have any comments or questions for this lady?
Well, I don't know what's going on with the DCF, but it does sound like one of the issues that my grandmother had with them. Like, the government part of the problem is it's not perfect either. The whole system inside and out is broken. But they will give a social worker 45 cases and tell them, make sure that you check on every single one of these children to make sure that they're okay. And they just won't have enough time to go through all of them and give them the attention that they need. Some states even pass laws where a caseworker can only have 15 cases at a time, and just to make sure that they only have the amount of cases that they can handle and thoroughly check out. They end up swamped with 50, even though
wow.
it's against the law, because there's just no one else to take the cases, to take those folders. So they end up exhausted. There's a high turnover rate for social workers, and they have to divert their resources to the kids that they know, absolutely know for a fact are in trouble. And that means a lot of the kids who have parents who are able to trick them on a trip or two are able to slide by.
Mm-hmm. And I would like,
they just
I
don't
mean,
have the
could
time.
Could I say this? I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I would just like to say that what breaks my heart is not just the fact that this is my grandchild, but if this is happening to my grandchild, there are hundreds more out there.
Right.
And heartbroken grandparents. I went to several AGA meetings. That's an Alienated Grandparents Anonymous meetings. There's a huge chapter in Naples and a small one that's starting up in the Sarasota-Bradenton area. And that one as well, several of the grandparents their grandchildren are victimized like mine is, and they have the same problems. They are aggressively denied any kind of help from law enforcement. These are felonies, third-degree felonies committed against a child. These are drug dealers. They know they're drug dealers. These are not people that my daughter's boyfriend can't hold down a job. That's how drug damaged he is. And all he does is deal drugs out of his father's house, who is also an alcoholic. When he was released from the detox facility, they wouldn't allow him to live with his father because of his father's problems. So this is a well-known, within the system, it's well-known. He's known to everybody. And so the problem, you know, why can't they just swoop in and take these kids and get rid of them? You know, place them with the grandparents. I say that we need to be a lot more vocal. Many of us are so heartbroken, and we are simply paralyzed by grief and anguish, and we're frantic over our family members, and I think that's what stops us from mobilizing. There are just too many of us to be ignored, and the longer our children stay in these situations, the worse off they're going to be. I know my granddaughter is developmentally affected by now. She was always
right.
A small child. They don't know what they're doing when they drug her. I don't know if they do it because they think it's funny or because it's just part of the culture or because he thinks it's advertising. I don't know why. But when the sheriff's department told me this didn't happen, and I started surfing the internet, and I sent them links, and I said, don't you tell me this does not happen, because in cities all over the nation, the United States, is happening. Toddlers and infants are being exposed, are exposed to narcotics, and they are dying. This is a bigger problem than the media wants to allow us to say. We do have a voice. We do have a voice, and there are so many of us.
Please connect with me on Wise Women Media on Facebook and hit the message link, and definitely get in touch with me in regards to that petition so we can get it out. I think it's really important. What is the name of the organization that you're involved with for the grandparents?
It's the AGA, Alienated Grandparents Anonymous. If you Google or Bing them, you will find two chapters. The largest chapter is in Naples,
mm-hmm.
and a smaller chapter, which is gaining momentum, is in the Sarasota-Bradenton area. And I would also like to mention, if I could please, that I can't remember if it's North Carolina or South Carolina, but this past June, the governor signed a bill, a grandparents' rights bill, and it's an awesome bill. It says that grandparents have a right to visit their children. If the parents deny visitation to grandparents, or I'm pretty sure it also mentions extended family members, aunts, uncles, nieces, that they must have a verifiable reason, a good reason. And I would love to see such a bill passed in Florida. The head of that organization, I think it's the Grandparents' Rights Organization, and again, I apologize, I don't know which Carolina it is, but the head of that organization is John Schaefer, and he can give anybody. I spoke to him on the phone. He's a very nice man. He told me how he lobbied for passage of this bill, and he did say that those of us who are grandparents are the largest voting bloc in the nation right now. So we do have a lot of political clout.
Well, the baby boomers are coming. I mean, I'm on the tail end of the baby boomers myself, but we're going to have more senior citizens, more on the younger end, within the next 5-10 years. We're at the tail end of this baby boomer thing. So there's a lot of people retiring, and we are the largest voting bloc. And also 53% of the voting bloc is women. So for women to not be involved with their children is, this is just, I want to say it's a small percentage of all women that would have their children taken away from them, but I think this number's getting bigger, because I'm thinking that these you know, not just the prison industrial complex, but big pharmaceutical and big medicine. And now we have these nonprofits that have money as their bottom line, not people's mm-hmm. lives, not families, not the welfare of children. And this is some serious stuff here. So somebody's got to be their voice. And what I would like to do is take the links. I'll research that bill and try to get some text for it. What I'm going to do is put, within the next day, I'll put the links underneath the blog post for this show on wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com so people will be able to take a look at the links, and I will also circulate that petition on the Wise Women Media Facebook group and Facebook page and on Twitter for Wise Women Media. I think it's important that this information gets out and that grandparents' rights are restored. There has to be some type of reparation and something in these bills where if the parents cannot take care of children for whatever reason, the grandparents should automatically be given that right should they want it.
And of course, I believe that is in the bill. That is in the bill that John Schaefer had pushed. And I just want to say one other thing. I'm in an industry, a personal care industry, and I have a lot of clients, and I see hundreds of people a week. And many of us have addiction problems in the family. And I will tell you that every clean addict, former addict, without exception, was arrested. Every single one of them. Nobody woke up one day and said, I'm tired of being an addict. They were pushed to their bottom. Their parents refused to help them. One woman, another Facebook, it's a closed page that I belong to, it's the Addict's Mom, and TAM. And there was a woman posted not long ago, and she said, my daughter is at the door, and she's crying, and she weighs about 86 pounds, and she wants a shower, and she wants some food, and she won't go away. And within 10 minutes, there had to have been 80 posts. And we all said, tell her to go to the shelter, and tell her if she doesn't leave, you're calling the police. If you do not push them to their bottom, if they don't know that they have nowhere left to go other than somewhere to get clean, they are not going to get clean.
Right, right.
And if we don't have the help, if my daughter right now, if someone took that child from her right now, that would clean her. She would go
right.
and get help. But she's not going to get help because this one thing she has, and she does not care who she hurts, and that is part of the disease of addiction. They
right.
don't care who they're human wrecking balls, and they don't care who they destroy, who is just destroyed in their wake. They're
even if
driving
it's their own children.
That addiction.
Even
right.
even to the expense of their own children. That's,
absolutely.
That's the sad part about this.
And that was the problem. And that was the problem with trying to drug test people before they got SNAP benefits. Because you're
right.
not giving the SNAP benefits for themselves. You're supposed to be helping the children.
I think I heard stats even, it was recently that, what is it, Medicaid or Medicare? I can't remember what goes to families. What goes to families and what goes to
Medicaid.
Seniors?
Medicaid.
I can't remember.
The one that
gets Medicaid made. Goes to families?
Right.
That four-fifths of that goes to children. So then you have the very conservative people that say, well, we don't want to give people handouts, and we don't think the Medicaid should be dispensed, and we need to cut back. And you know, here we have free market society, and you know, we need to go, you know, low-cost government. Well, what they're doing is they're not hurting adults. They're hurting children when you look
exactly.
at those. Because that's
exactly.
four-fifths of the money and the food stamps and everything else is what is going just to the children.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a huge problem, and I think, just as you said, this is not something that the media wants to cover. It's not something our leadership wants to cover either. That's why they keep talking about the middle class instead of the poor. Mm-hmm. They keep mentioning the middle class and the rights of the middle class, but they don't talk about the poor, because we, the poor, are the throwaway people. Mm-hmm. Whether we're adults or children, it doesn't matter. So,
I mean, what, you expect the sixth grader to go out and flip burgers for their health care instead of go to school?
I don't know what they think. I don't know what these... I don't know what...
I mean, but what's the alternative to that? If we aren't... If the government isn't taking care of the kids and the parents aren't taking care of the kids, what are they supposed to do?
Mm-hmm. It's really...
I mean, what's the alternative?
It's really become a...
We're going to have a big problem with education, because, like, my granddaughter, if she survives, what's going to happen when she starts going to school? She's going to have more behavioral problems, and let's just open a can of worms with these grandparents that end up do getting their drug in their narcotics exposed grandchildren, because for whatever reason, and I'm sorry, I do consider them the lucky ones, whose children just say, you know what, I'm an addict, take the kids, I can't be bothered with them. They are the fortunate ones. The unfortunate ones are the ones that the parents that hang on and continue to abuse and neglect their children and just won't let go. But these children, the grandparents tell me they're angry. I mean, one woman said she had her 4-year-old grandson. She had to take him to a psychiatric hospital. They admitted this child for 3 days. He's kicking, he's punching, he's spitting. He's hurting himself. He's 4 years old.
Yeah,
he's not the only 4-year-old. He's not the only 3-year-old. He's not the only preschooler who's acting out this way. They've got lots of issues, not just from the things that they've seen, but the chemicals that they've ingested. And what's going to happen when these kids reach school age and have to go to school? Our public school systems are, I mean, the teachers are having difficulty coping now. What are they going to do when these kids are shoved into their classrooms and they're told just to deal with it?
They are not going to be able, they're not prepared to take care of them in the classroom. They are not prepared to do that.
Nope.
And that is so scary, because it's going to end up being the dumbing down of the children, not just because of the drugs that they've ingested, but, you know, how they're going to be treated in just organized education.
Absolutely.
So this, we're talking about, are the next generations going to be smarter, or are they going to be dumbed down? So this is very, very scary thoughts here. I mean, once in a while I'll see a young person and they're so brilliant and amazingly clever. I say, oh, my God, I have hope for the next generations. You know, when I see somebody like that. But those people are becoming fewer and far, you know, fewer and further between. I don't see as many of them as often, and that scares me. I see more of, you know, the parents and the grandparents trying to raise the kids, and just it's a huge struggle because they don't get any help either. There's a family that lives down the street from me. I think they have 4 or 5 children, and this is a combination of 2 of their kids that were on drugs that could no longer care for them. So the grandparents ended up with them, and now as they're in their golden years, this has become a huge, huge financial burden for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they do the best they can, and the kids are in school, and some of them are doing well. But it's been very draining. And this couple should be going on a cruise or enjoying their golden years. You know, they raised their kids, they empty nested, and now this.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's tough for them, very tough. But with that, we can close the show, and I wanted each of you to give me, you know, some closing comments. Heidi, can you give us some closing comments on what we should do next? Because I'm thinking circulating the petition, finding out about this bill, maybe talking to others about getting something similar here in Florida. What's your feeling on that?
Well, it sounds like she's got a great basis for a citizen lobby to start lobbying for things like a grandparents' law. All it really requires is the organization of good people. I've worked for a citizen lobby before in around, 2005, and they would just go around and get tell the politicians they wanted to keep the utilities fair and affordable. Imagine if you're going around telling them you want them to take care of their children, the children of your children, of all the children in this state. And a bunch of angry grandparents in Florida, that's a pretty good electoral threat.
Well, the thing about it is that there's more grandparents in this state. This is one of the states that has the most. So there's probably a huge group of people out there that need help with this and have probably been very frustrated at trying to they don't know what to do next. They're lost, like this lady on the phone with us. She doesn't know what to do next. I think you're at your last bit of rope, aren't you, with all of this?
Yes, I am. And I'll tell you what, the more that you try to work within the system, the worse it is. Because, like I said, the information that I have now, I'm afraid. I have pictures of my granddaughter in various stages of her life when she's obviously high. And I'm afraid to send that to DCF, and I'm afraid to send it to the Sheriff's Department because they don't want to do anything about it. They've let me know that they don't care. They are so...
Or the other issue is if you did give them that evidence and they went and took that child, your granddaughter, they might not give that granddaughter to you, and they may give it to someone else. And then she's lost in the system to you forever because they tried doing that shit with my niece, excuse my French, but, you know, my niece was basically lost to me for a couple of years. And
That's what I'm afraid of, too. And you know, here's another thing, too. The system has been manned with like-minded people. Anybody who is sincere and tries to do a decent job or tries to help is overwhelmed and has to leave for their own sanity. I believe Heidi had mentioned that earlier. There is a story, and I can't remember what state it's from, but a young boy that was chained to his front porch, and a dead chicken was tied around his neck. I believe the child was 11, and the neighbors had called the police. I don't think they were aware of the child at that point, but they were calling about animal abuse and neglect. And a single officer pulled up in his cruiser, and of course there was the boy right in front of him. So the end of the story is that the child was a foster child, and he was living in the home of a DCF caseworker and a supervisor.
Oh my God.
So you can't tell me that these people don't know what's going on. Of course they know what's going on. It's too widespread. It's like Sandusky and Paterno not knowing that these boys are being molested in the locker room. Of course they do. They are of like mind.
Right.
And they promote activity. So I believe, I mean, as a petition is, and I do thank you so very much for helping with this. A petition is pretty much the last resort, but these people believe that they're hiding under a rock, and they believe that the rest of us don't know what's happening and that we are helpless, and we may in fact be helpless, but at least, at the very least, we can expose them. Look what happened in Steubenville, Ohio.
Right.
That was an entire town, and once that town got exposed, you know, at least something got done, and people aren't naive anymore. You know, this does happen in America every single day.
Well, what we need is not just a petition, but a citizen's lobby and a bill and something to get on the ballot. I think that's really, really important. If we can do that, that'd be a step forward. And I think here in that it would be widely accepted since we do have an elder population here that's very concerned about their grandchildren, wherever they may be, whether they're in this state or elsewhere. But grandparents definitely have rights. So with that, I'll close the show. Heidi, I want to thank you for the time you spent with us, and would love to have you at another time to talk about this. But I think you and I probably need to do a little networking and find out what we can do to get something going on in this regard, because this is a huge issue. And the lady from Sarasota area, I know you don't want to give your name, and I understand that completely. I want to thank you for calling in and giving us your great input, and you all can go to Wise Women Media if you'd like to pass the show around. The link is there to the archive after the show's live broadcast tonight.
Thank you.
And,
I sure will.
And I'm going to close. I'm going to say goodnight to you all, and I'm going to close with Suzanne Vega's beautiful song, Luca. So you all hang in there, and we'll talk again about this. And please don't forget, lady in Sarasota, to send me that petition.
Thank you.
Go to Wise Women Media and hit message, and it'll get to me personally. It won't be posted on the wall. Okay? So
Thank you all. Good
night, and here's Suzanne Vega with Luca.
Standing and clapping and... clapping and standing.
Just don't argue.
you.